Show me the money. Show me the money. That is ranked as one of the top movie lines of the past 100 years. Maybe you've heard it yourself. It comes from a movie named Jerry Maguire, where Jerry Maguire is a sports agent played by Tom Cruise who is in desperation to keep one of his clients. The client, Rod Tidwell, a wide receiver for the Arizona Cardinals, played by Cuba Gooding Jr. And he wants Jerry to say to him, show me the money. Not just say it like you mean it, Jerry. I think what gives humor to this legendary line is Jerry is screaming it over the phone for all of the office to hear. And what's even funnier, if you know a little bit about the movie, is that the scene actually wasn't scripted. Tom Cruise and Cuba Gooding Jr. were improvising as they were screaming this back and forth to each other. Cruise saying, this is the desperation that this character was feeling, that he had to keep this client, to keep credibility, to feel like he was worth something. Show me the money. Imagine having something to have a hold on you like that. That you would scream something like that. I feel like some of us, and why I think this line has such lasting legacy, is that we wish sometimes in desperation in our lives, especially when it comes to finances, show me the money. This is the question for us today. Can wealth bring us what we truly are desiring? Freedom, control over our lives, satisfaction, peace. Show me the money. Today, Ecclesiastes will show us that striving after wealth will not bring what you are searching for. Let's look, shall we? It's printed in your worship guide, Ecclesiastes chapter 5. Please pay attention to God's word. If you see in a province the oppression of the poor and the violation of justice and righteousness, do not be amazed at the matter, for the high officials watch by a higher, and there are yet higher ones over them. But this is gain for a land in every way, a king committed to cultivated fields. He who loves money will not be satisfied with money, nor he who loves wealth with his income. This also is vanity. When goods increase, they increase who eat them, and what advantage has their owner but to see them with his eyes? Sweet is the sleep of a laborer, whether he eats little or much, but the full stomach of the rich will not let him sleep. There is a grievous evil that I have seen under the sun. Riches were kept by their owner to his hurt, and those riches were lost in a bad venture. And he is father of a son, but he has nothing in his hand. As he came from his mother's womb, he shall go again, naked as he came, and shall take nothing for his toil that he may carry away in his hand. This also is a grievous evil. Just as he came, so shall he go. And what gain is there to him who toils for the wind? Moreover, all his days he eats in darkness, in much vexation, and sickness, and anger. Behold, what I have seen to be good and fitting is to eat and drink and find enjoyment in all the toil with which one toils under the sun the few days of his life that God has given him. For this is his lot. Everyone also to whom God has given wealth and possessions and power to enjoy them and to accept his lot and rejoice in his toil, this is the gift of God. For he will not much remember the days of his life because God keeps him occupied with joy in his heart. Herein is wisdom. We're just joining us. Welcome. We've been going through the book of Ecclesiastes this summer with this guide, Qohelet, which is interpreted as a teacher or a preacher or a philosopher. And he is running this experiment that where can we find meaning? Where can we find satisfaction in life? And he has run through these experiments of where it could be. Pleasure, work, religious ceremony. And you see, he looks at what is under the sun, meaning what is in this world, what is only the material, not looking at what is above the sun or transcendence. And what he finds in all of his experiments is it is vanity, vanity, smoke, vapor, enigma, something that cannot be grabbed to or grasped to find full meaning. What makes Ecclesiastes kind of wisdom literature is that it shows us how we are to live. And the way that Ecclesiastes works, it works through, again, the experiment of life. This Kohelet has lived it. He's done it. He's done all these things to the max. And he has looked under the sun, and he's found it is vanity. Question is, can we actually learn from someone that has experienced these things? We actually hear from his wisdom to know that these things cannot give meaning and value in life. Especially when we get to the topic today, an experiment with money. Now, this is super risky to talk about, right? It's kind of a faux pas to talk about money. Especially because when you talk about it, you say, is this person trying to get something from me? Especially in the church. And it's very personal to us. I mean, we've worked hard for this. We have sweat and toiled for this. This is ours, and now you're talking about what we have. Of course, we all have these maxims, too, to deal with the stress that comes with money that we just throw at the problems that sometimes we see with this topic. Money can't solve your problems. It's a terrible master, but an excellent servant. Or, oh, it's only money. The also risky part of this experiment is that so much of the air that we breathe in our culture, budgets, debt, cards declined, our blood pressure just kind of rises when we even maybe broach the subject. If I just had enough, my problems would disappear. Money can be an ultimate fix. This is probably one of the hardest experiments that we'll hear, especially with our culture that Koheleth will go through. But it actually might be the most important. And this is how Koheleth is going to run through this experiment. Number one, why do we turn to wealth? Number two, why we find it unsatisfactory. Number three, why joy is the solution to the problem. So let's look as Kohelet runs through this experiment, and let's run through it together. Verses 8 through 9, first, why do we turn to wealth? There's an interesting thing about Ecclesiastes that it is brutal about the realities of the world. And here Kohelet talks about the brutal realities of the world. The teacher shows that there's oppression and injustice in the economy. Leaders use this for their advantage. Rulers here in this passage are looking out for their own interest and the interest of other leaders. Politicians tax you. Bosses suck you dry while they might profit more. And here, Kohelet is talking, this is the reality of the economic system that we are in. And then in verse 9, yes, authority structures are in place to create checks and balances so that there can be some good productivity rather than just chaos. There's lots of talk about this passage, verse 9, and confusion. I'm not going to say I'm going to solve it all here, but I think there is irony in verse 9 that this system that is created is actually advantageous to kings and rulers and those in power. You know, I think a lot of that message of like the rich get richer, or, you know, people use money for their own advantage and we can be taken advantage of, fits a lot of the hero narratives of American culture in books and in movies. The idea that the hero is able to overcome the corrupt system and the oppression that they're feeling, and they can get their own freedom and independence. Like, that's Jerry Maguire. He's in this corrupt sports agent system. He wants to create his own business, find his own freedom, show me the money so that he can be on his own. I mean, that's really kind of the thinking of the individual project of American independence. Get me away from bureaucracy or politicians or the man, where, again, the rich get richer. The rules don't apply to the rich. The system is rigged. You've got to look out for yourself. You see, what we see when we go through Ecclesiastes, and it says this at the end, as the narrator talks about what this teacher is doing, that he is goading us. He is poking us. And he pokes us by showing us some of the brutal realities of the fallen world and our cynicism. And in poking us and in goading us, he's saying, what will bring us satisfaction if this is a corrupt system and we feel like we're working ourselves to death trying to make it ahead? Where will we find satisfaction? These leaders seem to do what they want and get what they want. I want that. How can I have that life? It might not be having a corporate jet or a $500 million yacht like Jeff Bezos, or to rent out Madison Square Garden for my wedding like Taylor Swift. But you just want to have enough money to have your own freedom for what I want. I just want to earn enough to get free from the oppression of the system. Just enough in my 401k that I can retire in peace. Just enough savings to put in the cabin so I can have time for my own. Just enough money so I can have vacation, so I can find some peace somewhere else. Show me the money. See, I think verse 8 and 9 sets us up to show us why we turn to the experiment of wealth. Well, we don't want to be these oppressors. We want to be them. We sure want to have the freedom and the abilities that they do have. Well, then, in verse 10, the teacher tells us outright the principle. He who loves money will not be satisfied with money, nor he who loves wealth with his income. This also is vanity. Again, he's run the experiment. He's told you outright, money will not satisfy. This is vanity. This is a vapor. This is a smoke. He's just said it to you. So, right, we should just believe what he says. Oh, if it were that easy for us. So what the teacher has to do is he has to give us three images and three pictures to show us how money will not satisfy. The first picture, verse 11, it says, when goods increase, they increase who eat them, and what advantage has their owner but to see them with his eyes? What he's saying here is, as you gain wealth, you gain more responsibility for what you have to pay out. You might have to keep up your image of being wealthy, or to work harder to maintain the wealth and the possessions you've had, or the responsibilities you have, or the mouths you have to feed, or whatever might come with the wealth that increases. It becomes so much of a problem that you can't even enjoy it yourself. You just look at it as everyone's running your money where it goes, and you can't actually enjoy it yourself. It's estimated that 78% of every NFL player will be bankrupt or face financial trouble 2 years after they retire. 78%. Odell Beckham was interviewed about this. Odell Beckham has been paid out $100 million in his NFL career. And it's hard to feel bad for Odell Beckham in $100 million, but even in this podcast, you kind of feel for him a little bit. He talks about, you know, taxes taking half of it. His buying luxury items he probably shouldn't have bought. Taking care of his family. Taking care of a community of people that are around him and trying to raise them out of poverty. That he has 5 years of a payout in this burst, and then he has to make it last 50 years. How a vast fortune evaporates. Some of us laugh. I wish I had those problems. But Kohelet is saying the same thing, that a narrative through time. Money is not what you think. He gives us a second picture here in verse 12. Sweet is the sleep of a laborer, whether he eats little or much, but the full stomach of the rich will not let him sleep. Talked about a laborer, maybe he's more worn out after a work day and it's easier to go to sleep because he's just tired. Well, the wealthy person is eating rich and expensive food and makes them sick and not able to sleep. But it might just deal with the anxiety that might be felt among those with more responsibility and power and wealth, that they are also not able to sleep because of that. You know, we might not see this, but statistics show that more income does not simply reduce anxiety. It might, as it shows, reduce anxiety over our basic needs. But in fact, it shows that the more wealth you have, the more complex the psychological pressures. And the research shows that anxiety remains the same regardless of your income level. Money will not simply satisfy. The last picture, this is a more fuller one, a story that he tells, and he calls this twice a grievous evil, meaning in the Hebrew, a deep and sickening pain. Here is this father that has gained lots of money, and then he's lost it through bad ventures. So much so, he's not able to give to his son and to an inheritance. And through time, what's happened is he has remained then alone, sick, angry. And again, the teacher shows this is a sick and deepening pain. That he had so much, that in gaining so much, he still did not find satisfaction and he lost it all and he died alone. I thought about this, give illustration over illustration through history about that. Charles Schwab, Nikola Tesla, the Enron Group, the Gilded Age, and then the Depression. And I could tell you story after story of people that have gained so much money and have become miserable people and have died alone, but none of his family members wanting to be around them. But the truth is, none of us really probably will make that kind of money or have that dramatic rise and fall. But I do think that we all could be prone to a deep and sickening pain. The hours that we spend trying to earn money to live comfortably. The amount of time we spend worrying about it. And that at the end of the day, there is vexation, as the teacher says, anger. And we can end our days not paying attention to our family, to others. That we end up just sick. And all of it can be gone like that. It's crazy. Jesus, he knew these struggles. Some of the most famous lines are about these exact things that Koheleth is talking about. You can gain the whole world and still lose your soul. You cannot serve two masters, God and money. One third of Jesus' parables were about money and possessions. Sometimes we think people in the past didn't have these kind of concerns, but these concerns were brought to Jesus all the time. One man came to Jesus and said, "Please, Jesus, tell my brother to divide the inheritance with me." These were money problems. Show me the money. And Jesus responded, "Life does not consist in abundance of possessions." And then he told the man a parable of one that had so much money, he built bigger barns to hold all that he had. And then after its completion, he died. And he didn't have time to eat, drink, and be merry, borrowing again from the language of Ecclesiastes. And Jesus says, this is very, very sad. See, Jesus wants also, like the teacher, to get to our hearts. And here's the conclusion of the matter. Again, the teacher talks about what is better. There is looking above the sun, looking at what is transcendent. And this is where God enters into the picture of this story of experiment of wealth. "Behold, what I have seen to be good and fitting is to eat and drink and find enjoyment in all the toil with which one toils under the sun, the few days of his life that God has given him. For this is his lot." And then in verse 20, "For he will not much remember the days of his life because God keeps him occupied with joy in his heart." The teacher wants us to see, behold, look, see what is happening above the sun where God is mentioned. All you have, all that you don't have, God has given to you. Rather than being preoccupied with striving and hustling, see what God has given you and enjoy. You love this word, what occupies the heart of this person that sees in this way is joy and contentment and what they are actually longing for from the beginning is that kind of peace. You know, I've decided that backyards, those are where we try to find some sense of peace and perfection. And I have a small backyard, but I want to find perfection there. A nice little garden. Fix the holes in the side of my garage that my daughter made. A sand pit that is full of flies and bees that needs to get removed. And through the years, good friends have helped me with those projects. New side on the garage, you know, a garden, you know, taking the sand pit out, right? But there's still more. There's peeling of the paint on the side of my house. I'd love a swing in the backyard. Maybe a hot tub where that sand pit was. That would be nice. If I just had a little more money, then I will have arrived in my backyard. I will have peace. It was, I think, a week ago. I was in the backyard in our rickety backyard table, right? The girls around, some friends. A glass of wine, some burgers, the girls teasing each other, laughing. And those moments hit you. This is what God has given me. And there's joy. There's joy with peeling paint, with no hot tub. with no swing. There is still joy that I can enjoy in that moment rather than what always has to be next. I love the movie Jerry Maguire. I'm not saying that everyone should see it. Please, under much adult supervision, probably not good for kids. But the movie Jerry Maguire really isn't a movie about success in money. It's about finding joy in friendship. In Rod Tidwell and Jerry Maguire, what happens is, in their pursuit for something greater, they find where real joy is. In a world where people want money. And it might be sappy at the end, but you find them crying and hugging each other at the end. And these other athletes like Troy Aikman's like, why don't we have this, to his agent, right? The point is, they found something greater. Some of you going through Seeing Jesus Together realize that we landed in 1 Timothy 6 this week. Let me read it to you. But godliness with contentment is great gain. For we brought nothing into the world, and we cannot take anything out of the world. But if we have food and clothing with these, we will be content. But those who desire to be rich fall into temptation, into a snare, into many senseless and harmful desires that plunge people into ruin and destruction. For the love of money is a root of all kinds of evils. It is through this craving that some have wandered away from the faith and pierced themselves with many pangs. You see, the gospel is wanting to show you that there is a better experiment for this broken world than money. That you can find enjoyment in Him. Behold, God has given you true freedom in Christ. That you do not have to claw and try to find significance in money and possessions. He wants you to enjoy what He has given you, that He is enough. And in that, you can truly enjoy. And maybe that's what some of you need to do. That striving, that fighting, that anxiety, that worry that consumes you about money, that you need to say, God, take it from me. Help me. And He is offering freedom to you. He is offering joy to you. That you do not have to be consumed by it. I would take Ellie and Morgan when they were very young. We lived in a very, very wealthy area in Colorado where I was an associate pastor, and we were not wealthy. And I would take him to the park, right? And I would, you know, sometimes feel sorry for myself and my lot in life and work and nice houses all around me and living in an apartment or whatever it might be. And one day at the park, there was another gentleman there. I knew him. He had one of the nicest houses in the neighborhood. He was wealthy. And I'd never seen him at the park before. And he was smiling, and he was playing with his kids. And I was like, what is going on? And then we struck up a conversation. And, you know, as a pastor, you're like, you're so used to the cliches of the gospel and its freedom and what it can give and everything like that. But then to actually hear it from someone, it's pretty amazing. He said, I found Jesus. And I can sit here at the park and enjoy my kids. And that burden and that fight and that burden that was on me is gone. And it is the most wonderful thing. Repentance and faith and change. Thing is, you can hear all these stories, right? Can run you through Jerry Maguire illustrations or Rich People or Koheleth or whatever it might be, and you hear how other people live and how they do, and they say money is not what satisfies, and many of us go, whatever. Would you listen? Would you hear?